So the fleeing of Bashar al-Assad has not caused calm because the Zionist entity, they've taken full advantage of the vulnerable position that the country finds itself in. They've literally attacked and destroyed more than 350 crucial pivotal sites, military sites. And, you know, the concern is, will we see a further escalation? And will this plunge Syria into further chaos? So additionally, according to the Turkish Defense Minister, Yasir Gula, the new administration in Syria should be given a chance to govern following the constructive messages. But not everyone is actually buying into this. So he went on further to say that Turkey stands ready to provide military training if such help is requested. Now, where do we stand in as far as Syria is concerned? And secondly, because the Erdogan administration did come in for some stick and criticism over the last couple of weeks. So let's unpack it. Media Review Network's Mariam Juma to help us expand and make sense of what is currently happening in Syria. Mariam, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, MJ.
So we are going to try and be a little bit hard-hitting, but to a degree, because we've been asked to actually come down slightly, considering that it is holiday. But things continue to happen at a very alarming and rapid rate in Syria, Mariam. We see, understandably so, also that the President Erdogan's administration has come in for a bit of criticism with what has been happening in Syria. Assad officially removed a couple of weeks ago. But we see that things remain very volatile in Syria, and some fearing that it may just become worse.
Right. So, MJ, I think basically what we always have to do is put into long historical context. So I think the resurgence of the rebellion and the ultimate victory of the coalition of rebel movements seem to have taken everyone by surprise. But it's quite interesting to note that over the 14 years, you know, initially we had paid quite a bit of attention to Syria, and slowly it seemed as though hope had faded and people had accepted that, you know, Assad would not be able to be removed, and we had to just accept it. Yet there was actually a lot of activity going on, and a lot of it had to do with capacity building. And so we come down to then the regional players, which, as you mentioned, Turkey is a very big one. But there's also Qatar and there's also Russia. And I think if we look at it at the moment, the left is in a crisis. It's actually in an existential crisis, because when we talk about Palestine, we have seen an immense amount of support from non-Muslim leftists who have been very vocal. We've seen people like Caitlin Johnston and lots of other writers. Okay, we have Owen Jones. I'm sure your listenership will be, you know, familiar with them on the Twitter sphere.
Yeah.
But essentially what we've seen now is where anti-imperial leftists are questioning, is this really what, is this a good thing, or is this not sabotaging the Palestinian cause? And I think where you stand has a lot to do with, at this point, I think it has a lot to do with how you see the game, whether it is that long game that we engaged in, or whether it is the immediate liberation of Palestine. And I wouldn't want to commit to say that, you know, I'm on either side, but I think it's important to weigh the pros and cons of both. It's quite clear that Israel is now emboldened to, as you say, you know, destroy completely the arsenal, Assad's arsenal. That was significant. I mean, Russia had invested a lot. But on the other hand, if we look at the way in which Turkey has almost, if I don't want to use the word infiltrated, but Turkey has managed to create a kind of a belt of administration in the north that can actually be a model for governance in the future. And now the question is, to what extent are the rebel groups independent of Ankara, and to what extent is it serving only Turkish interests, or, you know, helping the Syrian cause itself. And I think that, you know, time will tell. But it's important for us not to denigrate the fact that they have overcome 54 years of extreme oppression. And it is actually something to celebrate. But in the same breath, we don't want to be, blindly optimistic without considering, the pitfalls that may come.
So perhaps some are a bit preemptive, Mariam, concerned that the current instability in Syria may lead Syria to be a duplication of Iraq and Libya, or possibly even Afghanistan, because essentially what was left after imperial forces literally wreaked havoc, they allowed militia then just to run riot in those respective countries. Understandably, people perhaps would be apprehensive, thinking perhaps that this may then be the end game for Syria, perhaps in a couple of years' time down the line.
Yeah, look, I think it's important. It's very early days, and we are all skeptical in the sense that, you know, we understand that the minute CNN speaks favorably of an Islamist group, then, you know, there's got to be something behind the screen. But in the same breath, I would like to emphasize that we might not have been aware. When I say we, I mean the general public out, particularly in South Africa, we've been focused very much on Palestine. There has been movement in Syria. And you have to understand that Turkey has been hosting millions of refugees. So it's the country, the leading refugee hosting country in the world. And then Syrian refugees are not called refugees in Turkey, actually. They've been called multeciler, which means, transitory or even muhajir. So depending on, you know, which part of the country, if you're more in the rural area, they would say it's muhajir, or in the cities, they refer the refugees as multeciles, which means it's very different to the connotation that we have in English. It's not a case of, well, we kind of forced to keep these people. It's a case of brotherly Islamic duty and responsibility towards them. And of course, we've seen over the past, say, 5 or 6 years, there's been an increasing xenophobia. But that, in my view, has been a lot to do with the economic downturn that, you know, in any context, unfortunately, we've seen in South Africa, xenophobia, you know, rears its head when South Africans are dealing with severe economic situations, restraints. So in general, I feel that the price Turkey has paid that price very, very severely for hosting the Syrian population. And indeed, I don't think that, you know, the population that will be returning now to Syria are going to be ignorant of the fact that democratic rights, responsibilities, due process of law, the complete banning of any kind of torture. I am quite confident that the new leaders who have been trained in Turkey and elsewhere are going to actually be able to take on the new administration in a way that would take it to a better course, take the country into a better future, inshallah.
I think what you mentioned just a little bit earlier, and I kind of echo these sentiments, and I must be very honest, Mariam, looking at our mainstream media, the CNNs, the ABCs, the BBCs, Sky News, etc., when they tend to prop up and glorify, whether we classify them as rebels or militia, etc., etc., you then tend to really take a step back and you begin to question, why is it that you are glorifying these figures, and you kind of giving them the position of you are the saviors. You have now, and notwithstanding the oppression that the Assad regime executed in Syria over a decades-long period, notwithstanding that, and change was inevitable, and essentially we would want freedom for Syrians because they've suffered for far too long. But then you tend to become very skeptical, and you kind of take a step back, and you're looking at how our mainstream media, well known for propaganda, how they are carrying this narrative. So you're kind of stepping onto an arena that you classify as thin ice. You're not quite sure. So is it a matter of us waiting to see how this unfolds, or perhaps pay attention to the leftist voice that is going to become more and more vociferous also now as time goes on? What do you think, Mariam?
Look, I agree with you in the sense that the cynicism is actually justified. I mean, we've lived through the war on terror. We've seen what happened in Iraq, in Libya, Afghanistan. We've felt that absolute helplessness after you realize that the revolution has actually become a counter-revolution. So I completely understand the sentiment. But from an analytical perspective, I think it's important to look at the rise and the waning of forces in that particular area. And so to me, I would be interested in looking at why was it that Russia had left, essentially the soldiers retreated to their barracks. Why did they not put up a fight? That is strange. If you've invested so much into a regime, why would you not want to defend those assets? So to my mind, I'm thinking that, in fact, the overtake or the success of the rebels was not a surprise event. It was actually a mediated, managed between Russia and Turkey and Qatar, signaling the end of U.S. involvement. So what essentially might be in this, of course, as I say, is my personal analysis. It's not cast in stone. But I see the U.S.'s role being extremely diluted in the Middle East by a new force that is still backed by Russia, but is not as overtly non-Muslim. So we have a Muslim component of Turkey and Qatar that are going to be major players with the backing of Russia, but not necessarily dependent on Russia to essentially overturn what has been 100 years of U.S. imperialism. And what does that mean for Iran? Essentially, I think Iran would have to then, for its own survival, because it has taken on this axis of resistance mantle and has used it effectively in terms of its foreign policy image. What it would have to do now, looking at the fact that Syria is kind of a lost cause for them, is to almost normalize with the Arab countries. And if Iran normalizes, and if Iran kind of introduces democratic reforms that are in line with what one would expect with a democratic institution, we could almost think that there's a lot of hope for the region, so that actually the decline of Iran might actually be a harbinger of the renewal of the Middle East. But this is, of course, as I say, my personal analysis, considering the fact that Russia had not put up any fight, which has a major question mark.
I think certainly interesting sentiments. Mariam, just in conclusion, for those who have argued and perhaps will continue to argue that President Erdogan's administration perhaps acted selfishly in their own personal interests in Syria, focusing on the Kurdish opposition and continuing to smother them or keep them at bay, do you think there could be some merit there?
I think it's very important at the outset to make sure that we understand the difference between Kurdish, the word Kurdish, and the PKK. So the PKK are a militia force that are considered a terrorist group, even by the US and the EU and the UN. The Kurdish population of Turkey are normal citizens, and in fact, live side by side with their Turkish fellow brethren very easily. There's been no animosity on a kind of granular level. So the PKK say they represent the Kurds, but that is not necessarily the case. And how do we know that? Because the majority of the Kurdish population actually live in Istanbul. So the areas around southern and eastern Turkey that do have Kurdish populations, those populations have actually been in many instances almost terrorized into supporting the PKK. Over the 40 years of the conflict, since 1984, the PKK has used civilian populations as a weapon. And Erdogan's, or let's say the administration's focus on eliminating the PKK, and that's obviously not the Kurdish population, I don't think would have been a selfish interest in the sense of having taken in millions of refugees simply to do away with the PKK. I do think that the Turkish administration at that time, because obviously the foreign policy was made around 2011 to take in the refugees when it just started. I think at that time it was a strong party. It knew that it could do that. However, the language has now changed towards security. So from a humanitarian kind of reasoning, it has now evolved into becoming a security issue as well. So the idea that it's completely self-interested, I think, is a half-truth. Because on the other hand, if Turkey doesn't have a secure border to block the PKK from infiltrating into Turkey, essentially what we would see then is a U.S. Zionist-backed armed group, which is what the PKK and the YPG are. They are essentially backed by the U.S. and trained by the Israeli government right on the doorstep, basically, of Turkey and Iraq. So I think the factors are so complicated, but we must not lose sight of the fact that at the end of the day, you know, keeping Syria as a whole country without the breakdown of Syria is one of the key strategic objects of the Turkish position. They do not want to see a breaking up of the country. And I think that is something we should support.
Media Review Network's Mariam Jumwa. Jazakallah for joining us this public holiday on PM Drive. Enjoy your time with the family. I hope you're going to devote a couple of days, inshallah, to spending time with him. Jazakallah.